Blog Talk Radio.
Welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is January 28, 2011. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research, and I'm the head moderator of the Bring Forth Forums at bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you would like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 347-884-8770. Or you can join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. And please visit our sponsor, Alan Feibelman, at waternurtureslife.com for information regarding powerful crystalline water. Our bodies are 70% water. What kind of water are you putting in your body? Filtration is only the first step. Learn about crystalline therapeutic grade water at waternurtureslife.com. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. We will be here every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Carla, did you have any quick announcements before we begin the show?
Hey, Monica. I did have one for people to know that I was looking forward to having a surgical procedure to fuse the bottom of my back so I'd be able to continue walking. They were very kind and saw the ASAP notice on the doctor's orders for the surgery. And he put that there not because I was in an emergency situation, but because Jim has a short off season, which ends about the 15th of March when he has to start making his yards ready to cut. So by having the operation scheduled on February 28th, which is only 2 months of a wait since they decided to do the surgery, about half the time I waited before the last surgery, Jim will be able to take care of me for the first 2 weeks, and he's thrilled to death. So we're tickled about it, and I don't know what implications it'll have for the show. My last surgery, I couldn't sit up, and so I couldn't use the equipment, and we couldn't do the show. So this surgery, I have no idea. It's on the bottom of my back. If I'm able to sit up, given that I'm not too dopey from the pain medication, we might be able to continue it. We'll just have to see what happens at the time and play it by ear, which we're good at doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you really wanted to get that taken care of as soon as possible, so I'm glad that's worked out for you.
Yeah, it's much better than I thought it would be. I was expecting April or May because that's the way it was last time. But he pulled some strings, I think. It was very nice of him.
All right, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
How about you?
Oh, well, we got a new fence put up, a nice cedar fence, and we have been working on our garden, planting fruit trees. So we've been having a lot of fun with that. Definitely connecting with the earth. Yeah. It's beautiful, beautiful sunny weather down here during the day, and then we get a little cold at night sometimes. Well, we're going to start tonight's show with a quote from Those of Ra. This is from the first session of the Law of One. Let us for a moment consider thought. What is it, my friends, to take thought? Took you then thought today? What thoughts did you think today? What thoughts were part of the original thought today? In how many of your thoughts did the creation abide? Was love contained? And was service freely given? You are not part of a material universe. You are part of a thought. You are dancing in a ballroom in which there is no material. You are dancing thoughts. worked in your spirit in somewhat eccentric patterns, for you have not completely grasped the concept that you are part of the original thought.
Thanks,
Would you like to comment on that, Carla?
I would. This is my favorite single quote from the Law of One material. This is in the very first session, and it was before the questioning began. This was what the Ra group had to say first. They talked about being called to the group. They said the confederation of planets in the service of the infinite creator has only one important statement. One important statement. That statement, my friends, as you know, is all things, all of life, all of the creation is part of one original thought. So then they said that they were going to try to exercise the channels. And before they tried to exercise the instrument known as Dawn, I was channeling. They gave that paragraph that Monica just read. It's fundamental to the Law of One that you grasp this paragraph. This is what they came to offer. And I think it's a powerful, powerful offer. We are all about thought. It's so hard for us in this material world, this world of 10,000 things, to realize that the realest, the most powerful things in our life are our thoughts, not our actions, not our attempted actions, not our successful actions, not our failures, not our triumphs, but our thoughts. What goes on in our heads? What is it, my friends, to take thought? What thoughts were part of the original thought? The original thought, of course, being the logos or unconditional love. Did the creation abide in your thoughts? Was love contained? Was service freely given? They're offering the key to living a service to others' life. It is a key to the dance that we're dancing. And I can dance even though I ride in a wheelchair most of the time in this thought world, because we are dancing thoughts. We are dancing in a ballroom in which there is no material. We're dancing every time we think. What did we take thought about today? What were our thoughts today? Were they kind? Was love contained? I cannot say that every thought I had today was service to others. There was service to others involved in my thoughts. And I did meditate this morning and dedicate my day to the Creator. But I don't believe I've lived a day in my life where every thought was a thought that contained the original thought. But it's a wonderful thing to encourage in ourselves. It's a wonderful thing to seek, to see the Creator in everyone, so that we are thinking thoughts of love towards the people that we interact with during the day. To see all of life as a dance, and to monitor our thoughts with the same care that we would monitor our social behavior. Because what happens inside our head is not private to us. The vibrations of our thoughts are part of the vibration of all that there is. So there is no such thing as privacy in the Law of One. Certainly, we can be private from telling other people what we are thinking, but we cannot be private on the fundamental level of the vibration and the frequency of our thoughts. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you for listening. And thank you for loving the material that L&L Research has put out through the years. This is my favorite thought from those of Ra. Okay. Enough.
Well,
opening rant. What kind of question do we have?
Ooh, that's quite a rant. Okay. I'm not sure if rant is quite what I would call it, but that was definitely very, very powerful thought there. We actually have a live caller tonight, and I'm going to unmute this person from area code 859. Hi there.
Hello.
Are you with us?
Yes, hello.
Hi, who are we speaking to?
Bob.
Hi, Bob. Did you have a question or a comment for Carla?
Well, first off, I want to say good luck with the surgery.
Thank you.
And secondly, thank you for all your hard work. And I got about a million questions, but the main one is I've been looking over the website, and Carla offers personal counseling. And I was wondering if, my main quest would be to contact my own inner self, and would she be a good person to do that, or would she recommend someone else? And since I live fairly close, I was just wondering if that would be something she could assist me with.
Oh, well, it depends on what you want from the counseling. If you want my life experience as somebody that's worked with spiritual seekers for decades, I'd be delighted to work with you. If you're looking for specific answers, like should I get this job or that one, or what did I do in my past life, there are psychics I can recommend to you that would do a much better job than I. And if you need therapy, I'm not licensed. I have never been trained. So what I offer is basically seeing you at the soul level and taking care for your soul as I listen to you. At one time,
yeah,
I call it spiritual listening.
Yeah, basically, it'd be I've read so many different ways of accomplishing what I'm looking for. Once I could contact myself, then I can answer my own questions. So the question I'm asking is, would you be able to assist me in my own technique of doing it myself, basically?
Well, I do work with people to teach them the things they need to do to get ready to channel. And you're looking to do a certain kind of channeling. But I can talk with you about how to do it, and then you can try to do it on your own. It's safe to reach your own guidance system by yourself,
right,
where it's not safe to channel by yourself. So,
right. Would I just email you from the link on the website?
Yeah, contact at llresearch.org.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could set something up, and I could run you through the technique involved in dialoguing with your higher self, and then you see if that works for you.
Well, that would be fantastic, and once again, thanks for all your work.
Well, I just thank you so much for saying that. It lifts me up to know that it's been appreciated. You have to know that it's a privilege and a pleasure for me to do this. I have the best job in the world. How many people get the incredible satisfaction of feeling that they really are serving? And I get mail every day, and people are so kind. So, you know, you're very welcome, but believe me, I get so much out of this that there's no sacrifice involved. It's just a joy. I wake up every morning, I just can't wait.
Fantastic. Well, I want to say, too, keep uploading the videos. I watched a few of those this past week, and those were excellent also.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, we got Don Elkins. The only video we ever got of Don Elkins is from a TBS show called Open Up. And Renee Martin, who is a social networker who is volunteering here and who has done all the video work since she came here in October, believe it or not, that's how much she's been able to pump out in this short time. Put the hour and 20-minute interview up in 5 seconds on YouTube recently. So you can just YouTube/llresearch.org, and you'll probably, it'll probably come right up. I haven't tried to do it, but.
That's something else I wanted to offer you guys, too. I've been a musician my whole life, so I'll put that in the email, too. But if you have any need for something like that, I'd gladly donate my time.
Just how close are you?
Oh, I'm right down the road in Lexington, so.
Oh, well, that would be so neat if we could get together and see if we could do some work together. I've not had an accompanist for, decades.
Well, I'm a multi-instrumentalist and have all my own stuff, and I'll definitely shoot you an email, and we'll talk off
That's
here.
Great. I look forward to it. Did you have a question about the material, or were you just looking to find out if I?
Yeah, just for that, I'm still going through the raw stuff and haven't even touched any of your other material yet. So,
well, when you've got the raw stuff, you've got the best stuff that we've ever.
It's so far so good.
It's a little harder to read than some of our other things, but it's certainly the pure gold.
Oh, that's no problem. Thank you much.
You bet.
Okay, Bob, I'm going to put you back on mute. You can continue to listen or on the computer, either way. But thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a question from someone going by T. And T asks, what part do dolphins play in influencing the evolution of human and planetary enlightenment? I have heard that the Master Jesus, Emmanuel, was known as the King of Dolphins. Do you know if this is if this statement has any validity? And if so, in what context is this so? Do dolphin beings ever incarnate as human beings?
I do not know anything about the dolphin-Jesus connection, although Dionysius was also mythically connected with dolphins. There was some story that sailors were diving off of a sinking ship or something like that, and as they dove into the water, they were changed into dolphins. I don't know anything about Jesus and the dolphins, although a dolphin or just a fish were two symbols, basically the fish shape or specifically the dolphin shape, were signals that Christians used among themselves to identify themselves. They might have a tattoo or they might draw a dolphin or a fish on a wall to indicate that this was a place where Christians dwelled or where they were living. And so dolphins and Christians do have a connection, but it's usually the Christian rather than Jesus the Christ that is connected with dolphins. However, I think that the way dolphins became so advanced is that both dolphins and whales were some of the combinations of humans and animals that were created during the time of the Atlanteans' high technology, mostly crystal technology, just as it was when the Confederation served those of Egypt and tried to offer them information on the pyramids and stuff. And it was quickly spoiled by being held up for an elite and not used for the good of all the people. Just so in Atlantis, during this period of high technology, it was perverted from any spiritual use, and there were governmental experiments having to do with, putting birds and humans together to make great big birds. putting dolphins and whales with humans to make great big seagoing mammals and so forth. So there were third density dolphins and whales. And so the entire population of the dolphins and whales became third density. And they have the same power to change the light on planet Earth as all of us have, no more and no less. They are third density. They are service to others. And if you've ever watched animal shows and stuff, you know that dolphins have long been observed to be very protective. For instance, a bunch of kids are in the water and dolphins are swimming around and sort of creating a fence, and it's only seen later that there's a shark out there and the dolphins are protecting the children. This happens again and again. So dolphins are very service to others oriented, and they lighten the consciousness of planet Earth in their watery home, as we hopefully do as we breathe the air.
Well, this is interesting to me as someone who has been swimming with dolphins. We swam with dolphins that were in what they called voluntary captivity, so the dolphins were free to leave. And we took some pictures, my husband took some pictures underwater of the dolphins, and one of them, in the photo, you can actually see a dragon head. And it's not bubbles. it's really unmistakable. And I'm just curious, you know, because you see these little statues and whatnot that from the supposedly the ancient form of the dolphin, and it looks like a dragon head. Do you know anything about that, or have any idea what that might be?
No, I don't. Not something that the Law of One questions ever covered.
Well, I'll have to email that to you. It's very interesting, very intriguing.
Yeah, I'll see the photo.
If you
email it to me, I'll put it up on my blog so that people who are listening to the show can see it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We'll do that. I've got it on the Bring Forth website. It's already on there as well. Well, okay, we'll take the next question. Is there a separate, now I'm not sure who this is from, this was one that was submitted anonymously, is there indeed a separate plane of existence beyond space-time and time-space? You know what, I just realized I think this is probably a follow-up question. Let me read the first part of this, and I hope I interpret this. This is a little technical. I hope I read this correctly. Okay, this is from Brad Owings. Ah, Brad is 3D Sunset, one of our Bring Forth members. Dewey B. Larson defines three distinct planes of existence, which he refers to as the physical sector, or S/T, which I'm assuming is referring to space-time, the cosmic sector, or time-space, both of which make up our known universe, and the metaphysical sector, which transcends both space-time and time-space. These sectors could be seen as mapping fairly closely in the Law of One terms to, respectfully, 1D, okay, first density, second density, third density, and beyond, wherein 1D existence is controlled purely by physical forces, 2D existence in space-time, which is further influenced by cosmic forces of time-space, which act counter to entropy and cause life, and 3D existence in space-time, which is further influenced by metaphysical forces, which are counter to the 2D laws of survival of the individual or pack, and thus cause ethical behavior. In the Law of One, Ra implies an existence in several places that transcend space-time and time-space, but elsewhere states categorically that all metaphysical existence is contained in now, T/X, I'm not sure what he's referring to by T/X, or if that's a typo and maybe he meant time-space. Logically, it makes sense that there must be a level of existence that can easily move between space-time and time-space as we do at birth, death, or during dreams. My question is there indeed a separate plane of existence beyond space-time and time-space? And if so, what are the spiritual aspects of this plane? Could this accurately be described as the plane of the spirit?
Okay. I am not aware of the third division. I am aware only of time-space or the metaphysical sector or the realm of the spirit. And the sometimes called the cosmic sector. And the physical space-time, which is our consensus reality. I think that if there is, was it metaphysical sector? Was that the third one? Is that his wording?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I went to lawofone.info because I did not remember a metaphysical sector. I just remembered the time space and the space time, I didn't remember a third one. So, excuse me, I checked this out just by going metaphysical sector. And what Ra says about this is in session 15, and it's the cosmic sector of the universe where manifestation is defined by the relationship time-space is often referred to as the metaphysical or realm of the spirit, though these terms are not accurate either. So I think that the best that I can offer is that no, to the best of my knowledge, there are not three sectors in the Ra philosophy, there are two. There are the seen worlds and then there are the unseen worlds. And those together make up the physical and the metaphysical parts of the creation, space-time and time-space. I wish I could tell you more about that, but I really don't know any more than that. That I'm trying to offer the best that the Law of One has to offer, and I've read it so many times that you'd think that I'd have it memorized by now, but I have not remembered anything about a third sector that's just beyond space-time or time-space. I think it's an intriguing thought, and it may well be part of the Larsonian cosmology, but it's not part of the Ra cosmology.
Brad is also wondering about what plane we operate in when we experience near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences. And what? Are there other interactions between space-time and time-space that are not related to living things? And he goes into chaos theory concept of strange attractors as an example of an inorganic interaction between time-space and space-time. I'm not sure what he's referring to, but the spiritual aspects of strange attractors.
Intellectually and logically, I'm not half bad. But when it comes to technical information that I haven't studied, I'm pretty poor, and I have no idea. But I think that we are living blends of time-space and space-time, and that our bodies are in space-time, our energy bodies are in time-space, our thoughts, solving problems, deciding what order to do our errands in, that kind of thinking, solving problems in the everyday, that's space-time, but our consciousness is in time-space. When we are starting to go out of the body, we're working in the unseen realms, working in time-space. Even when we have thoughts, before we put them into words, they're concepts and they're part of time-space. So we are living blenders of time-space and space-time. And the trick to living a spiritually oriented life is to make the time-space portion of ourselves consciousness, the mind of the heart, the intuition, the insight, the knowing, as important in our considerations as our worldly thoughts, which are practical and linear and logical. So it's really good for us to encourage ourselves to bring in that consciousness, that consciousness that contains the one original thought, as our opening quote said. So to bring that one original thought, to bring that love, to bring that consciousness into our considerations, though they may seem to be mundane, you're often surprised in considering how to do something or what to do by realizing that one solution has the benefit of being more loving, more giving, more heart opening. And when you see that and you choose that, then you're polarizing service to others every time you come to a choice point. So it's always good to invoke the time-space portion of yourself, your the mind of your heart, your consciousness, your connection with the one original thought of love into mundane decisions so that you can hold the light, so that you can continue to keep your heart open and do what you came here to do.
Okay, thank you. You are listening to In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. If you have a question you'd like to ask, please call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted. That's 347-884-8770. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. And we do have a question submitted in the chat room from Maddie. Maddie asks, Ra talks about balancing love with wisdom and wisdom with love. He also talks about power. Can you talk more about power and how exactly power comes into play?
Okay. The Ra group talked about love, power, and wisdom by suggesting that the LL research group that existed at the time of the Law of One Contact, which was Don Elkins, Jim McCarty, and me, were good examples of those. He talked about Don's being the epitome of wisdom. He talked about Ma being the epitome of love. And he talked about Jim's being the epitome of power. So he said that while it was difficult to define those things, we sort of had those roles because of our personalities, because of how we had lived our lives. So I think it's a little more obvious to see how you balance love and wisdom than to see how you would balance power and love or power and wisdom. But I think the key to working with power is that what is powerful is your thought and your intention and your desire. So the more focused that you are, the more you know yourself, the better that you have become aware of your thought processes and what you're all about, the better that you can set your intention to do something or to be a certain way, and the better that you can sustain the effort that it takes to follow through with that decision, follow through with that intention, and bring it into manifestation in your life. So the great issue with power is its right use. When one realizes oneself as a powerful person, then the question becomes the right use of that power. However people experience themselves, you see, makes a big difference in whether or not they're people that need to balance power. If they do not perceive themselves as powerful, then they're working either mostly from an open heart that needs wisdom, or they're working mostly from wisdom that needs to open the heart. But if you perceive yourself as powerful, then that likely will loom large in your life, because you will be setting your intention and pressing your will to do things because you're powerful. Now, Jim, for instance, set his intention at the age of about 7 to learn how to pole vault. He had access to the soft material that bananas are wrapped in when they get shipped in large cartons to grocery stores, because his dad was a grocer and his mom helped out in the grocery and they got bananas in all the time. So he collected all this soft stuff. He put it in the backyard and he would run through the garage with his makeshift pole and practice going up on the pole and going down into the banana material. And by the time he got to the age where he was allowed to compete in track meets, he was a pretty good pole vaulter. He held the state title for a couple of years, a modest 12 feet and some inches, I think, but for, you know, for him at that time with the equipment that they had at that time, it was a very good effort. So that's the kind of thing that he was capable of even as a very young boy. And Jim ended up retiring right after he finished graduate school because he didn't see any work that he wanted to do as much as he wanted to build his own cabin and live apart from people for the most part in a state of nature. So he built not one cabin, not two cabins. He built three cabins, a beautiful outhouse with a stained glass window and a stone cellar. I mean, this guy really had the power behind his thoughts to make them come into manifestation, and he was resting the house that he lived in, you know, from the forest. You know, he cut the trees, he cleaned the logs, he made a cabin, and lived in it for 6.5 years until he came to LNL Research in 1980. So I think when you're powerful, it's easy to be service to self because you have the power to get things done. You have a natural charisma. You have the ability to influence others because it's very persuasive to people when they see somebody that can get things done. They just really want to be like you. They want to follow you. Jim has always had the regard of both men and women. For instance, when he was playing sports in high school and college, he was always elected the captain of the team, and you don't really know how important that is until you realize that that position is one that the other players elect you to, so that they know who they want to say, resolve any disputes or to help people become cohesive, become a team. And Jim has always very, very few times in his life has he been eloquent. He usually stays silent. But there have been some times where eloquence was needed in a situation to bring warring parties into a point of reconciliation. And Jim has been able to do that. So that's certainly a right use of power. I think right uses of power also include the ability to handle relationships in your life without trying to possess or trying to persuade or trying to make things come out your way. When you have that power, you can choose to moderate that power because of compassion, because of wisdom. So in some cases, the issue of balancing your power is to bring more wisdom. You have power, you have lots of love, you can get things done, but you don't really have a lot of wisdom about it. So maybe your impulsivity might take you over and you're pressing. Say, for instance, here's a good example. I got a note recently from somebody that wanted badly to be of service to other people, but he was confused because he'd start to do something that was of service to others, and he said, you know, people wouldn't seem to want him to do that. And so he'd try something else, but then he'd find himself blocked. And I told him, I said, well, you know, you don't have to choose how to be of service. All you have to do is choose to be of service. And then wait for what happens to you. Observe the moment. And you will soon find a way to be of service in that moment. And that develops, you see, over a period of time, going from one thing to another thing to another thing, and then eventually settling into something that not only are you glad to offer, but people have a lot of feedback for you saying, you've hit on something that's been helpful to me. And that was my answer to the guy. I said, you know, release the will that says I will do this service, unless there's a service that you want to do regardless of how it comes over. If you feel that's your service, then offer that and just let that be your life, whether or not you are apparently successful. If you feel strongly enough about that service, then do it. But if you don't, if you're just looking for a way to be of service, then just let life bring it to you, because it will. When you make that commitment to be of service, you will be used. And, you know, it might be something small. It might be something hidden. But you might be just of as much service that way as in some great outer work like channeling or teaching or healing. So the idea when you're trying to balance power is either to find wisdom and apply that to these abilities that you have to make things happen. Or if you're wise and you're making things happen out of wisdom, then maybe you need to invoke compassion and let love color your decision making, so that the right use of power for you then would be that which contains love. That makes sense to you?
It does to me. I hope so. To Maddie. And Maddie, if you have any quick follow-ups, just let us know in the chat room. We do have a few people in the chat room, and we just would like to remind everyone that we really do love hearing your voice, too. So, gosh, we would love to have people calling in. So if you'd like to call in and you're not feeling too shy at the moment, just join us at 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770. Be sure and hit the one key so I can let you into the show. We have a question submitted by Matt. Matt says, now this was sent previously, I understand that third density requires that an individual be given equal opportunity to choose between light and dark in any moment. Is it really necessary that every work for positive change be transfigured into an agent of demonic intent? What can one individual do to assist in the healing and forgiveness of this fundamental pattern? Is it even possible to take a positive action in third density without creating a counterbalancing effect of increased darkness?
Okay, well, I think, Matt, that you've got the cart before the horse. It's not that for every positive opportunity, a negative one will be offered. It's that all opportunities can be both positive and negative, depending on how you look at them. So when you're looking at a situation, you always have the choice of how to act. Are you going to act in service to others, or are you going to act in service to self? When you act in service to others, that doesn't mean that there's somewhere else in the world you're releasing demons. That just means that you've lightened the consciousness of planet Earth a little bit by taking thought to make your actions be loving. So I don't think that the world is striving towards equal opportunity for both positive and negative polarity. I think the world is neutral in polarity, in that it is 360 degrees of potential. And when we choose out of all that 360 degrees of attitudes and emotions and actions, hopefully we will choose the positive, the loving, the radiant, and the inclusive in the way that we relate to the world around us. The world does not have to come into balance. The world actually needs to be distorted along one line of seeking, either service to others or service to self, in order to sort of bring the slower awakening people on the planet to a point of awakening and realizing that they are citizens of eternity and not simply those who might as well be mayflies to live one day and die the next. Certainly our bodies are going to live and die. They're very ephemeral. They don't last long. But our essences, our soul streams, are infinite and eternal. And we truly are citizens of eternity. So it would be directly opposite to the workings of the Law of One for our good actions to breed demons. It would be equally implausible for people's service to self actions, you know, taking other people's resources, stealing their good name, or controlling other people's lives. There are so many subtle forms of slavery in this world. And if you've ever been involved in corporate America, you've seen some of those service to self attitudes in full flow. It would be just as ridiculous to think of those actions spawning angels. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't hold together. At least it doesn't hold together to me. Maybe this is an idea that you need to think through in a couple of different ways and see what good there is in it. I'm not seeing the usefulness of this thought because it doesn't seem to me to be the way things are. Distortion is a term that the Ra group used a lot, but it's not a bad term. It's just saying that anything besides unity, total unity, is a distortion. So we actually want to further distort our vibrations along the lines of polarity, along the lines of service to others in this world. And we're not trying for neutrality. We're not trying for a dynamic balance, except in our own thinking, But in terms of lightening the consciousness of planet Earth, we're trying to make a difference. We're trying to bring the whole planet to a lighter, a more enlightened, a more aware state of mind in which it's easier for people to wake up. And there are more lighthouses out there to inspire them to do that.
That question reminded me of a philosophy I've heard, or a theory, I suppose, that I've read about and I've heard people talk about, the theory being that there's equal, perfect balance between light and dark, good and evil, etc., in the universe. So every time there's something good, there's also something bad. And I remember when, you know, discussing this with a friend one time, and I remember thinking, in light of the Law of One, in light of what we know about the various densities in this octave, then it would seem to me that there isn't such an equality between the light and dark. I mean, even if you look at the percentage required for graduation into STS or STO, it's not even the same.
No.
So I'm wondering if that might be what that person might have been referring to.
Well, it's possible, and it's the kind of thing, because it's a symmetrical thought, and it seems on the surface of it to have merit, yet if you look at it from the standpoint of what the Ra group has been able to share and what the Confederation in general has been able to share about how things work, it's definitely not the way things are. Now, one thing that does come to my mind in talking about this is the fascinating details of the war in heaven, so-called. It's seen in the Bible, where the Lucifer, the fallen angel, rises in rebellion and is kicked out of heaven for it and falls to earth in a lake of fire. And so his dominion is earth. And Michael, or Michael, as it is pronounced in magical circles, is the leader of the good angels, and Lucifer the leader of the demon angels, and there is constant war between heaven and earth, or the angels and the demons. And the Ra group said that a lot of people, when they get to fourth density, you know, when they graduate and they're in fourth density, and they discover that there are people that are fighting this war in the inner planes, continuing the war of Lucifer and Michael, they join that. And what happens is that neither side can ever win, because light always starts to win. You know, the positive side starts to win, but they're losing their polarity by fighting. So they have to drop out and go for healing, you know, and gain their polarity back. And then others pour in and they take their place. So it just goes back and forth and back and forth perpetually. And the joke of it, or the irony of it, is that it's not necessary. There is no need for a war in heaven and earth, although I believe the Ra group did say at one point that it softens the blow of those here on earth by taking some of the energy and working it out in the unseen realms. Still, what happens is eventually those both positive and negative realize finally that there's no need for it, that they see beyond these seeming unalterable differences to the final conclusion where positive and negative become unified in service, because the negative side has to give up their side finally and has to convert to service to others, because they finally have to admit that there is such a thing as the heart, and that they all are one with their brothers. And of course, the service to self path is based on a lie, which is that everybody's separate. And so you serve the Creator by serving yourself and by teaching other people how to be as selfish as you are. That's basically the service to self path. And it's a tough one. I mean, when you think about the fact that you have to be 5% service to others or less, in other words, 95% service to self, to graduate in service to self. You only have to be 51% or oriented in service to others to graduate. Just a little more than half the time you have to have a thought in your head about somebody else and if they're doing okay. And so obviously the easier path is service to others. And it's also the most enjoyable path. So it's a natural choice for most of us, I think. Monica, we're getting towards that time of...
We are. We just have a couple of minutes, well, about 5 minutes left. And there is a very quick question that was left over from last week or maybe the week before. Maybe we might fill in that last 5 minutes. This is from Jeannie in the chat room that's asking about he says, I saw deep blue, the color blue, the other night, and I'm wondering if colors can appear just before an illness.
I would think colors can appear all the time. There are lots of times when I'm in meditation and all of a sudden I'm seeing swirls of color. It's not actually seeing, it's being impressed by or feeling them or sensing them. It's not physical sight, obviously. If my eyes are closed and, you know, I'm in a dark room meditating, I'm not seeing colors. I'm being shown colors, or they're the energies that are associated perhaps with my state of mind. Jim and I were doing an intention meditation the other morning, and he said, that was so neat. He said, I was seeing squirrels of purple and gold the whole time. And I asked him, well, you know what I'm setting my intentions for. What are you setting yours for? And he said, well, I've set them on the mantra relax and enjoy. So I was focusing on that thought and that mantra, and I was getting those colors. So I think that colors are very important signals to us. Our chakras have characteristic colors, the colors of the rainbow. And colors also mean subjective things to each of us. But colors equal emotions, I think. And I saw a study one time, and doggone if I can remember who did it or who the author was or what school put it out. But there was developed a system of color correspondences which would equate to people's psychological state of mind. And, you know, you were shown all these different colors and then asked to pick your favorite color. And then from that, the psychologist would be able to know certain things about your state of mind. So colors definitely can come into any thought, any bodily situation, any emotional distortion, you know, anything that's going on with you will definitely have the potential of giving you a characteristic color to be impressed by. So it might be interesting for the person that asked the question to Google on colors and psychological testing and see if he can find that old study that was probably done sometime in the 70s. Because I know they created a test from it. Don and I were interested in it. We both took the test. And sure enough, it showed Don to be a very melancholy person, and it showed me to be a very calm person. So, you know, just that simple, what's your favorite color? So it's very interesting about colors, and colors have a tremendous power. Pure color, what was it, Ra called them? Pure colors, no, that's not right. True colors. He suggested, for instance, that if I were irradiated with true color blue, that it would help my body. I was under psychic attack at the time. And we tried, we got a projector, and we found a cellophane color, the kind that you used to put over Klieg lights. And that was supposed to help me. And it never did a doggone thing, and we asked Rob about that, and they said, well, it wasn't true color blue. We thought, well, that's as close as we could get, so we dropped it. But, yeah, colors can definitely be associated with not feeling so good, either mentally or physically.
Okay, wonderful. We are actually out of time. Thank you for that, Carla, and I'm going to share just a very quick comment from Maddie said, from the chat room that asked the question earlier. Maddie says, I just wanted to let Carla and you, Monica, know that I really appreciate your work and I listen to the show regularly. Yay, we have a fan. Okay, and Maddie says to Carla, also, Carla, I love how you talk about learning to fall in love yourself. This is something I've been in my heart. And there's a comment from Nega Nova saying that was awesome. So we are going to close the show. We're out of time. Thank you, Carla. And to our listeners, you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Records. I'm your host, Monica Leal. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, llresearch.org, which is our archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One, interviews, speeches, and more, and bringforth.org, that's bring4th.org, which is LL Research's community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. And you can also submit questions at bringforth.org. Just go to the miscellaneous section and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Record submitting questions. Or you can submit a private question to me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, MAGICKAL, moons@gmail.com. Be sure and visit our sponsor, Alan Feivelman, at waternurtureslife.com for information regarding powerful crystalline water. Our bodies are 70% water. What kind of water are you putting in your body? That's waternurtureslife.com. We will see you next Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, and have a wonderful week. We'll see you then.